CliffCentral.com.
What do you think about that?
Does it Michael come back from the dead?
Yeah, this is one of the new Michael songs. I say new, but it was released like a couple of years ago after his death.
Yeah, that's it was being worked on just before his death and then released after.
I'm here for this
posthumously.
It's amazing.
Ah. Yeah, I quite like it.
I'm not mad. Anyway, it is Tuesday the 16th of October 2018. This is the second hour of the Gareth Cliff Show. If you've just joined us, well, we're just continuing a conversation we started as we were wrapping up the first hour. Leanne got an email around the East London Zoo.
Yes, allegations of mistreatment of animals there, cages too small, etc. You know, these allegations are not researched by us. We don't know the full facts, but we are getting a lot of response from this. Mm. And Ben's been doing some research on TripAdvisor, and in particular, there was quite a big complaint, which I think warrants some action.
Well, yes, Leanne, I'm glad you bring it up. Obviously, we touched on the fact that the cages enclosures are far too small, but the food is also oily, and the milkshake is essentially just Nesquik.
Oh, my goodness me. That changes everything.
That's a game changer.
I mean, it's just a breakdown of moral society, really. You want a milkshake, and they're literally going to put some powder.
Unacceptable.
They're probably the kind of people that use skim milk as well.
Horror. Horror.
What are people saying?
If you you can message us on 07974-8-2090. Mr. Schmangles says.
Not from East London.
I know where Mr. Schmangles
is from.
I think
Mr. Schmangles is in England, I think.
Really?
I think.
What makes you say that?
Is that the picture you've built up in your mind?
Because he probably said as much.
Oh, but perhaps we can go with something like that. Yeah. That's more accurate. Regarding your comment about solitary animals, Ben, Mr. Schmangles says, I'm a solitary guy myself, but I still need to sharpen my pencil sometime during the solitary life. Those animals look like they lost their mind because of blue fucking balls. That's what I think. Yeah. Starving those poor fuckers from having contact with opposite sex.
Fair comment. There's
and
also
that's
there.
A direct quote yeah. from Schmangles.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like something you would say, Sia. No. Not at all.
There's something so sexy about saying, you know, sharpen your pencil. I don't know what he means by that. I don't know.
It's a journalism term.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
No, but I think the gist of what Mr. Schmangles is trying to say, it's all good and well to keep these animals on their own, but yes, they do need company in particular to just go around and, you know, mate and
do the birds and bees thing.
Yeah, be normal, really. So,
do we have better comments about the East London Zoo?
No, that's about it. After, I think, you know, Mr. Schmangles left it on a high, really. Do you want to get into some news stories this morning?
Yes, absolutely. Just to recap on VBS, the VBS scandal.
Yeah, the term of the week.
Yeah, that's, of course, after the great bank heist report was released last week. So the Vavenda King, King Tony Mpepo Ramabulana, says that he will pay the money back that he received from VBS Mutual Bank as tainted gifts. That's not saying that he's admitting. His spokesperson says the issue here is not about the king denying or not denying. He just realizes that some of the money or gifts that he received came from sources which are tainted. He wasn't aware initially. He's aware now only through all of this. And he says the king is at pains and is feeling pain with his subjects who have lost the money. And on that note, KPMG, well, their partners could face a 2 billion rand claim on VBS, and their insurance might not pay. So all KPMG partners, even those who've jumped ship, could be held liable for a potential claim of 1.89 billion following the firm's disastrous audit of VBS. The firm has indemnity insurance, but it may not pay out in case fraud was committed.
Sorry, Leanne, just hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
KPMG, that was the Gupta thing, right?
They've been involved in a lot of things, yes.
So they were involved with the Guptas and they were auditing VBS Bank?
Yes.
some perhaps questions.
Draw your own conclusions.
Draw your own conclusions here. These guys got into bed with the, wow. Wow.
Well, in the meantime, KPMG International is sending foreign execs to South Africa to help prop up the firm amidst all of this scandal.
Sheepers, and there's a lot of good people working at KPMG, and in the past, I mean, they were reputable.
Yeah, I've had family working there.
Exactly.
I don't know. This king's speaking out now, and I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but in these times that we're living in, screw the benefit of the doubt. Let's just say, why didn't you speak up sooner? And I don't think people who are corrupt and steal and take money that isn't theirs are not self-centered enough to begin to think of the impact this has on other people.
Mm.
You aren't stealing from multimillionaires. You aren't stealing from billionaires. You're stealing from people who have trusted you and what you have sold them. You are stealing from people who have invested their entire livelihoods, their retirements, their investments, money for the children. You are ruining someone's life. You're ruining someone's possibility to study and make something of themselves. You're
ruining the life of their children and their children's future.
If I am 60 years old and this has happened to me, what am I going to do with the rest of my 25 years of life? I'm now screwed. And have these people been able to get their heads out of their own lives enough to think about this? Because if you have, how do you even go to sleep at night?
Well, it may be a late admission, if it's an admission at all. But the Vavenda King does say he's doing this for his people. He feels terrible for them and feels absolute agony for them.
Damn right.
Great. Say that while you're in your motorcade, and then you'll go back to your massive property, and then when the heat gets too much for you, you'll move to your Johannesburg home, and you'll be able to feel pity in your air-conditioned third lounge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no, dude. I think of
Bernie Madoff.
And I remember watching the movie about him and how many times both he and his wife, even though his wife didn't have anything to do with it, were considering suicide, and they wanted to kill themselves because mm-hmm. of the weight of thinking about people's lives.
No, you're essentially ruining people's lives.
Oh, you have. And the thing is,
when you
lives.
Ruin one person's life, people have dependents, right? So basically it's like a domino effect. So you're creating so much. But think about this VBS. Would you have deposited money? Again, I'm not saying people should have known better, because a lot of people never had the opportunity to information like we have, okay? But when they gave Ujekorp the loan from Kandla, maybe that was a red flag that this bank isn't maybe, you know,
credible
place where you want to put your money.
Best person to trust.
It's like when you're driving around and you're behind a car that has a lot of dents in it.
Yeah.
You just avoid it. You avoid it because you know that it's probably them that are the bad drivers.
Yeah, and it says Jermaine's Driving School.
Yeah.
Mm. Call this to pass your test.
We have Graham on the line who wants to comment. Morning, Graham.
Hi, how's it?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
No, I'm just wondering, maybe we shouldn't be teaching sign language in schools. Maybe we should add an additional class. Maybe we should have an integrity and honesty class. Because it seems that no matter what we touch in this country, it either gets stolen, robbed, looted, or left to waste.
It's a fair point. So if there's no understanding of what this is from an early age, how can we expect people to ever adhere to it?
Yeah, I mean, like, I almost give up. I mean, like, if you look at the life essence of anything, I mean, like, no wonder the animals in the zoos are left to rot. Mm. If we can't even look after mentally ill patients, how can we look after animals in the zoo? If we can't even have working toilets in school,
yeah,
where kids are drowning, how can we ever possibly imagine to have zoos that function?
Yeah, Graham, I almost feel, I was having an interesting conversation with a friend of mine last week. I almost feel like people of whatever prominence in this country have now got to the point where all they care about is legal and not legal, ethics, morals, and all that kind of stuff. That went out the window a long time ago. And even then, when they boil it down to legal, not legal, they're still pretty shady on just that element.
No, absolutely. There's no altruism in this country. It's not. Yeah. It's not a matter of doing what's right because it's the right thing to do. It's you're doing what's right because somebody's watching, and if they're not watching, then you do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And it just makes me ill. It's like people need Jesus, man.
It is. It's horrible because no one's learning respect. They're only learning fear. Take away the fear, then they work with impunity.
Yeah, it's like we were a big zoo ourselves.
So a class on morality, integrity, accountability, honesty.
Sure. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds so rudimental and basic, but it seems to have gone out the window. Mm. Absolutely out the window. From people just tossing their litter wherever they walk in the streets, and I'm including myself, I'm a South African, to people being left to die in hospitals, and then we have these inquiries. What the hell is an inquiry? Nothing's going to happen from it. It's like basically like, oh, let's negotiate about the things we did wrong until everyone forgets.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Until it fizzles out, yeah.
Mm. Anyway, sorry for the negativity. Happy Tuesday, everyone. Have a lucky day.
You too, Graham.
Thanks, Graham.
It was actually quite positive within the negativity there. Yeah.
And it's quite a messed up point in time we find ourselves in. If we now have to consider, let's go back to basics and let's teach morality, mm-hmm. let's teach integrity, let's teach what should be. Maybe we're being presumptuous in hoping or expecting this thus far. What should just be ingrained in all of us.
Yeah. Well, here's something that links directly to that. These are five smart things to do right after making a big mistake at work. We're not talking VBS big here. We're talking about just normal mistakes that you make.
We can't help you out of that situation.
At work, yeah. The first thing is, and this really would help me, is remember that you're not alone. You're not the only person in the office who's made a mistake. So if you feel concerned about being the only one at work who does, fear not. I often send emails to clients and I forget the attachment. And I feel so unprofessional
Attachment, because then your email actually reminds
you. Picks it up, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you feel like such a pupple for doing that. And then you've just got to realize everyone else does it too. None of us are perfect, nor your coworkers would be either for 100% of the time. It's just not possible. The second thing to do is to stay calm. So according to...
Don't scream, lose your head, run around the office.
According to a survey by Accountemps, 45% of professionals say that they've cried at work. 52% say they've even lost their temper. Emotional outbursts in the office are certainly not rare, but the key is to make sure that for you they're not frequent. Take a few deep breaths and compose yourself so that you don't trigger a cascade of additional mistakes. Mm. Keep things in perspective is the third one. So unless you're a brain surgeon or a pilot, and this is important to me, I think, there's a good chance that making a mistake at work is not a life or death situation.
True.
Yeah, but in the moment, it's everything.
It feels like it. But if you're a pilot, it is. And if you're a brain surgeon, it is. But beyond that, or careers in that field, drivers and that sort of thing, beyond that, it's not the end of the world. It really isn't.
Okay. All right. I'll try to remember this.
Number four, find a solution and prepare for the future. So compose yourself and then make moves to fix the error. Evaluate your actions. Determine what needs to be done differently next time in order to prevent future issues. You can even communicate these findings to your boss, which will show him or her that you are trustworthy and take initiative. And number five, enjoy the ride. Mishaps and failure play an integral part in personal and professional growth, because they help you learn more about what you're doing and more about yourself. And in fact, mistakes can even help your company and organization at large.
Hmm.
Don't panic.
This is far from what I do.
It's the opposite, right?
If I've screwed up, I shut my laptop down. I say, oh, guys, I need to quickly go for lunch. And then,
well, that's composing yourself. That's
no,
good.
I just drink and then it's extended and I only come back the next day.
Yeah, drinking just delays
just puts it on hold.
Yes.
Numbs it out for a while. Mm. I do think there is something to be said about how you handle problems in your life. You know, it's not necessarily a fight or flight thing, but if right in the face of conflict, whether you can instantly rationalize everything and you can figure out steps, or whether you feel overwhelmed and breaks you down, or some people, you know, problems are just exterior to them. Does that make sense? Like where it just happens to them and they're able to move on unaffected. Where some people might have that workplace cry.
Yeah. Some people just become completely submerged in the issue instead of taking themselves out of it. Like I say, I'm one of them as well. Taking everything personally.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
Mm.
I say that as a prime A candidate of someone who does that. I'm like, what did you say?
Yeah.
And it leads to a whole massive ordeal. Michelle also says on Telegram, you know the new building that's been constructed in the foreshore next to the new hospital in Cape Town?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go with it for now. She says that it's the KPMG building. It was put on hold for a while and has only recently been started up again. She just says those are dodgy buggers. Okay then. I wanted to raise something up earlier while Gareth was on the line, because I think, what are the chances? Or maybe he might be the New York City lucky charm. But this past weekend, for anyone in New York, they actually went for the first time in a quarter century. So that's 25 years. As great as New York is, it was the first time in 25 years where not a single person was reported shot for all of Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. What the gangsterism is going on in New York City? That's incredible.
Well, it's just cities, yeah? They're overpopulated. People get angry with each other.
I don't think Joburg can even fulfill that stat.
Of course not.
For three whole days, the NYPD is now currently celebrating. Three whole days, no one was shot in New York City from Friday straight through to Sunday.
But they found a ton of bodies on the Monday.
Yeah. It's just the bullet casings were missing, and they said maybe it was a stabbing.
Yeah.
Of course, the mayor is now like just milking this moment for everything that it is. The mayor saying, I have to tell you, this is a winning team for sure. And to give you some evidence about as recent as it can get, this last weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there was not a single shooting in all of New York City. Isn't that amazing?
Jeez. That really is. In modern built-up cities, that is amazing.
But do you know what I love is how particular you have to be when you look at a story like this. The last shooting prior to their amazing streak was on Thursday at 11:30. So come on, like 30 minutes before it's technically Friday. I mean,
Stats don't lie,
yeah. Yeah, I guess. Oh, the way they're reporting about the story, when a 25-year-old man was blasted in the stomach. But shucks, okay. It's unfortunate, but in New York, you can at least celebrate that in the meantime. And also, something else that is happening over in America. Hey, to each his own, I guess. So, supposedly, in a survey that was taken back in 2016, 71% of online daters consider political differences to be a deal-breaker. Would that be a thing for you?
I think anyone who is really ingrained in a political party and its ways and its mandate or finds, you know, is cultish about it, I would be completely put off by that. But if it's just somebody who casts a vote and, you know, it's just like, oh, I have to vote for someone, then that's okay.
Yeah, because based on this survey, enter Donald Daters. Mm-hmm. It's a new dating app that launched yesterday with the mission of helping Trump supporters meet and mingle on a platform that is free of any liberal backlash.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the States, it's huge whether or not you're a Trump supporter. And it could break up a relationship or stop it from even starting very easily.
And so if 71% of people, though, if we go by that survey, say that this is a deal breaker for them, it actually makes everything easy if you think of it that way. So the app is similar to other apps like OkCupid or Tinder, and it gives users a new set of matches each day based on various preferences that they can preset. And users can chat for free when a match is mutual and block any potential liberals that troll them. And Donald Daters is currently open to everyone. It's a different dating app of note for Trump. Well, a different dating app for Trump supporters called Trump Dating found itself in hot water when it was discovered that the man who became the face of the app, this was a North Carolina conservative activist, had been convicted of filming himself having sex with a 15-year-old girl. So perhaps the connotation there wasn't really great.
You know, even though we're in South Africa, if it was a South African who really supported Trump or, you know, agreed with his ways, I would find it difficult to be in a relationship with that person.
Really?
Mm. Hmm. Even though we're so far removed.
Wow. That's the thing, though. I started doing my research, and this is what I was surprised to note, though, that this isn't the first of its kind.
Mm.
There are many other websites exclusively devoted to people who support Trump. There are
Christian websites.
Yeah, you know, there's TrumpSingles.com. You can go up there, you can sign up, you can create your profile. And once again, I'm just saying, if we go by the survey where 75% of daters have and consider political differences to be a deal breaker, this just makes it everything easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd want OprahSingles.com.
Start it.
BeyonceBabes.com.
Do it.
Oh, guys.
Okay. You've got homework.
To trademark BeyonceBabes.com. Yeah. And make that happen.
So we often think about Airbnb when we're traveling. We don't think about how often it affects South Africans and what a positive spin it's put on South Africa's tourist economy. So these are the stats from Genesis Analytics. Mm-hmm. About 35,000 South African hosts have benefited from the increasingly popular web hospitality service Airbnb. Of this number, 65% of the local hosts are women. The advent of Airbnb in South Africa has affected, has affected an estimated 8.7 billion rand in economic impact in the last year. It's resulted in 22,000 jobs being created across South Africa. Nice. And to think it didn't exist at all before, and no one would consider, a tourist wouldn't consider just staying in somebody's house. And now it's become a thing. It's become completely normal. It's taken 10 years to get to this point, but tourism and business are booming since then. 2 million guests taking up lodging in South Africa alone and 3.5 million altogether on the continent. So, and obviously the mother city remaining the most popular city by guest arrivals with Airbnb, but listings in Pretoria and Durban are being taken up swiftly.
That's very nice.
Has it on Airbnb in South Africa?
I did once in Bloemfontein.
Yeah, I've done it in Cape Town before.
That's cool.
How did Bloemfontein go?
It's great. The guy was running a very sort of tight ship.
In what way?
In that it was, there was ample parking, because obviously it depends on the structure as well. Ample parking, there was a spacious room, and everything was very detached. Mm-hmm. So, if you'd like communal areas, it's not my thing, but you can do that. But it was cool. Different entrances. He was very helpful. Great communication process. But you can see, like, that's what he does in Bloom. He's an Airbnb Bloom maverick.
You see, that, when you put it in that way, your experience, I don't necessarily mind. My only issue with B&Bs in general is when it seems like you are right in Danny Mariki's house. Mm. And there's no...
Yeah, but if you always wanted your own Tani... Win.
Silver lining. I get it, but it's just not for me.
You get more information off of an Airbnb site because you have to have all of that information in order to list your property. You get a lot more on that than you do on a guest house or a B&B website that's just operates on its own. For instance, I've stayed in a guest house that I had no idea my bedroom door was right opposite the owner's bedroom door.
Oh, no.
It resulted in some things that I saw that I just never want to see again.
What?
Yeah.
Did they connect? I don't even want to get into stuffed animals?
No, her completely naked having sex, right?
Nice.
So the worst you can actually go to, That's what I saw.
But again, Leanne, that could be someone's cup of tea.
It could be.
No.
But with Airbnb, you've really got to explain exactly how the property is situated, where the room is. Is it a private entrance? All of that. And just from the other perspective, being involved in properties myself, you know, someone might have an idea of opening a hotel of sorts, like a boutique hotel. But if you actually get into it, the requirements that you need in order to get a star rating or to be even considered as a hotel are crazy. It's liquor licenses, it's wheelchair access, lifts, all sorts of things. And if you can't offer all of those things for your property, Airbnb is such an easy way to go for that. You're not forced to stick to all of these requirements. You are what you are, you list what you are, and if people like it, they come.
Apart from, now that I think about it, I think I've only had one B&B experience. I've never done Airbnb just because I just don't like the idea of it. And when I did stay at a B&B once, what I didn't enjoy about it was the fact that I felt like I was too much in someone's home. I had to always call the homeowner when I was coming in. And I remember when I was leaving, they were like, well, just make sure, because I was just going out for dinner, like, just make sure that you're back by 11:30. Now I felt like my mother was around and I have a curfew.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You know?
This is the horses for courses here. You don't want that. Go to a hotel. If you're going to be, going to be in a small town, you're going to have someone at least to lock a door.
Well, needless to say, I was emceeing something in a different city and they put me up in a B&B. Now I know why you need a rider to say, if you're going to book me.
Put me in a big ass hotel with 69 floors, 96 floors.
That $92 million one in New York, that's what I need. Has anyone ever done the sleeping on a couch thing in an Airbnb?
No.
I'd be interested to find out how that goes.
I wouldn't.
For me, the whole thing, the only thing that puts me off is linen. I'm funny with linen.
Or lack thereof.
Well, that's also kind of a problem when you're at a hotel. Just don't think about it.
Yeah, but it's always crisp and either smells of nothing or of niceness. But you know when something's musty, or you can just feel like you can feel someone else has slept in the bed. I don't like that. Or you used that towel before. Just feel like it just came out the box.
Jared says, I use Airbnb every time I go to SA and have been for 2 years already. Okay. Don't have anything bad to say. So obviously you've been having great experiences. And then Duncan says, Ben, are you looking forward to the F1 this weekend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And on to the next thing.
And that concludes Ben's feeling on the F1. We have an awesome guest coming in just a bit. Her name is Nambita Benmas. We're ready to chat to her. But before that, this is an oldie but a goodie. Remember a few months ago when Heineken released that ad and there was just this big, big deal around it supposedly being racist because they were, the premise of the ad was someone walking up and they were drinking a Heineken at a bar and they slid a beer bottle on the bar counter and slid past three black people before stopping in front of a lighter skinned woman.
Okay.
Remember that? Well, Trevor Noah had his take on this. It's a couple months old, but it's quite interesting. So he calls it How to Make a Racist Ad.
Let's move on now and talk about racism. There's different levels of racism. There's cross the street racism, and then there's burn across racism. And somewhere in between, there's this Heineken ad.
This morning, Heineken taking some heat over a controversial commercial that many are calling racist. The ad shows a bartender sliding a light beer down the bar. So it goes past a black woman, a black musician, another black woman. But the beer stops next to a glass of white wine with this caption, sometimes lighter is better.
Ah, Heineken, why? What were you doing? Like, how are you going to make an ad where you say lighter is better and then you slide a beer past all the dark people like it's some kind of racist curling? What are you doing? Like, and that's, can I be honest, that's not even my biggest issue with this ad. I want to understand how the hell that bottle got to the woman at the end, right? Because it somehow slides from the bar to a totally different bar past black lady number one, right? Then it goes under black guitarist dude's legs.
Then magically it's up onto a tray. I don't even know where this tray is. Where's the background? What's going on here? And then it says, bye Felicia to black lady number two. And then it shows up on another part of the bar. This ad is anti-black people and anti-physics. I'm sorry. That's the part that gets me. And you know, honestly, this happens so much now. I almost wonder if it's really an accident. You know? Like all these ads. Because you realize with DVRs and streaming, people can just skip commercials now, right? The only time we get to see ads is when they show up in the news for being racist. Like, I bet the ad guys are putting racism into ads just to get our attention. It's like, okay, guys, I don't feel good about this, but if we want this Home Depot commercial to pop, we're gonna have to stick a Klansman into it, okay? People need to know about the sale on table saws. Come on, guys. So look, this was a screw up on Heineken's part, but they've apologized. They've pulled the ad, and they said that next time they'll go with their original slogan, niggas love this shit. Oh, man. You know what? Like, this kind of thing keeps happening, right? And if you're a brand out there that doesn't want to be in the news for the wrong reasons, you need to bring in a professional. But if you can't afford a professional, then we've got just the man for you.
Are you a big-time ad agency that has no black people? Do you keep making mistakes like monkey shirt, racism refreshments, a protest snack? You smoking crack. Don't be the next company to get towed up by Black Twitter. With Leo Devlin's Ask a Black service, you can consult an actual black person before you launch an ad campaign. It's like having your very own black friend that you pay.
Now, what about Mammy Jammies?
Nope.
Make the Kool-Aid man a watermelon.
Get that shit out of here.
We see a slave.
No, you don't. The hell is wrong with you? And I know what you're thinking. Leo, you are a big, strong, handsome man. But I'm advertising to women. Well, Ask a Black has you covered there, too. You can just run it by my wife, Leah Devlin. Leah Devlin gonna straighten your ass out.
What y'all need to stop doing.
Hold on, baby. Don't give it to them for free. It ain't but $85. You can get that from your mama. So remember, before you run an ad you can't take back, ask a black.
Ask a black institute of
It's the 120 at Fairgrounds.
Oscar Black from Trevor Noah on The Daily Show. It's funny, but it's true.
Well, it's an interesting point after that whole H&M monkey jersey scandal thing.
Yeah.
You know, we ask the question sometimes, maybe these brands are rolling the dice because people aren't noticing advertising anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what this whole spoof thing was.
But for me, when all of these incidences happen, my first thought is instantly, well, clearly there wasn't either A, no black person in the room, or B, a black person who could speak out or who felt comfortable enough to speak out.
That's a very good point.
Anyway, let's move on with the show. Why not? I'm very, very excited. I'm very, very
there's the 11-year-old you coming out.
You are very excited. You're very excitable.
Very excited to chat to our guest. Her name is Nambita Benmazwi, who's someone whose cool points on my rating scale are at least a 13.5 out of 10.
is that why you wore your special outfit today?
This is it. Yes. Nambita, I wore this outfit just for you. What do you think?
Ooh, please stand up. Mm. You're okay, giving girl. Me fives. Mm. I love it. Yes. I think I'm going to get something similar.
Put your backpack
on. Dungarees are back on.
Put your backpack. He's got a backpack.
And stripes are in.
And a lunchbox.
No, because I only raise this up because these people, well, Leanne, these you people, were nice.
Your esteemed colleagues.
Well, not Ben. You were horrible to me for my whole outfit because I even have a backpack with it.
Do you have a backpack?
Yes.
Okay, we have to take a picture after this.
Okay, so you think it's fine?
I think it's lovely.
Never mind.
Own it.
Let me introduce you properly. Nambita is an amazing, accomplished actress and talent all round who is now stealing hearts of viewers as she's returning to screens on Sunday, every Sunday night on SABC 1 with a new 13-part legal prison drama, Diamond City. Dum,
yes.
Dum, dum.
Dum, dum, dum.
What's Diamond City all about? Tell us about that quickly.
Oh, Diamond City. Honestly, I think it's one of my best works to date. I'm very excited, all locally. I'm very excited about it. It's nothing that the SABC audience has seen, which mm-hmm. I'm very, like, I think we need to bring in quality series, to be very brutally honest with you, especially for free TV. Mm. But, it's a crime drama. So think How to Get Away with Murder, think Ooh. Scandal, think Orange is the New Black, because it literally is caught between the two walls of the courtroom and the lies beneath that Ooh. And the female prison. So it's literally a juxtapose of those two worlds in every single very chasey, very fast paced scenes.
Yes.
A lot of drama, a lot of solving to do, a lot of twists, but it's very ugly, man. And it's people in really great positions, like NGOs who are saving young children from the streets and then underneath all of that is kind of, without giving anything away,
yeah.
a bit of, you know, what's relevant now, like, trafficking. And you know, it's just, it's greatness filled underneath with a lot of deception and lies.
Well, there are some incredible topics. Okay, I say incredible. They're quite unfortunate a lot of the time to tackle in such things like this.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about these actuality shows and obviously the stories that we cover here on the show. I mean, things are happening out there that people need to know about, because you don't want it to happen to yourself. You need to become more informed by this. And these kind of shows give you the opportunity to be more informed.
And I think it's pretty relevant with a lot of children who are being stolen for trafficking and bodies. I mean, you know, our world is kind of getting scary right now. It's very concerning. So for me, as a storyteller, I always endeavor to tell very true and authentic stories, but stories that can actually change people's lives and touch them. So I'm very, very excited. I play a lawyer, attorney at law.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Menati Zwide is the character. I'm absolutely in love with her. We're quite different.
Okay.
And I always try and choose roles that are vastly different from the next. So every role that I've played, there's absolutely no similarity. She is a clumsy, timid, you know, she's not quite got things going for herself, but, it's a journey of growth for her. A journey of, there's a lot of doubt that she has on herself because of the people around her. She's a junior lawyer, but she gets thrown into the deep end with a high profile case without a second chair. She's doing it on her own. And, you know, the person that she's representing is like her hero, her Beyonce, her poster girl, you know?
Now we get it.
And she's
a
lawyer.
We all get it in the room when you use Beyonce.
Yeah. There we go.
Throwing the Beyonce analogy and Sia's got it.
I saw his eyes kind of lit up there. I was like, okay, Sia, you really that excited?
Like, now we're here. Uh-huh.
But, you know, and she really gets it pretty hard from her. She's like, you're never going to win this case. Like, I mean, you don't even know what you're doing. You're embarrassing in court.
Yeah.
And it's a really journey of her to kind of just be like, I got this, you know, and it's a journey of self-actualization and she becomes bold. She becomes a slayer. She becomes basically the most sought after lawyer. And it's really more of a journey of her proving herself to herself.
Okay, so you don't have to reveal too much more on the series, but just answer this. Are there any murders?
I mean, what is a crime drama without a murder?
So, you know, they're not being, the people aren't being tickled into court here. Okay. What's going to be murders?
Is there a good girl gone bad element to it?
Okay, you need to choose between Beyonce and Rihanna. Like, okay. I mean,
he can't. He lives in perpetual motion between the two.
It's fine. We won't dig deep into that. We'll just watch Diamond City on SABC 1. What time on a Sunday night?
8 p.m.
Fantastic. We'll set our alarms to that. But this is what I'm interested in, more so in everything that you've done thus far. Mm. How did someone who studied business science end up acting and taking on the media world overall by storm?
So I went through that. I'm a nerd at heart. I really am. And I own it. And I still, till this day, read my Harvard Business Reviews. And I'm obsessed with really what's happening in our environment. But it was a journey of coming back to myself. So throughout my upbringing, I've always been involved in the arts. I did musicals. I'm very inspired inspired and influenced by my recently late uncle, Winston Jonah, and him obviously having a Tony and being on Broadway and being the stalwart that he has been.
Wow.
And growing around him, John Gunney and Fugard, and that was a very big influence for me. But I never thought that this is something I could make into a career. It was always just, it's a hobby. And, you know, I was that proper straight A student. I was like, okay, what do I do now? Very embarrassed to say, but I was inspired by Donald Trump in his days of The Apprentice.
Well, that's when he was doing what he was supposed to be doing.
There we go.
Properly.
Now it's a bit scary.
Yeah.
But in an interview.
True.
He mentioned business science at UCT as one of the really great business programs to study. So I followed through. I did 5 years of that. I worked in corporate and a software, global software media company. I did the strategy work. And, you know, it took over my life in the sense that while I was in varsity, I could still, you know, I hosted the World Cup and I had radio and I was still doing my passion as a hobby. And then as soon as I got to corporate, it was like, wow, I could never go to an audition now. I'm waking up on a Saturday going to the office. I'm leaving the office at 2 a.m. during the week and I was miserable.
Was there a particular moment?
There was a particular moment.
That just made you go, yes. What was it?
Funny enough, I got a call from one of my good friends, shout out to Nguli Ntleko, and she had taken the plunge. And she's like, I'm leaving this, my job. You know, she was working at HP. She's like, I want to do design. I'm going to go to the University of Florence and, you know, in Firenze. And this is what she's going to do. And she's like, Nam, I know where your heart is. You can kill it. Do it. And that really was it for me. That was the turning point. I also had to have a very authentic a real conversation with myself in the mirror, and ask myself if I'm fulfilled, if I'm happy. Although I was great at what I was doing, I was very comfortable. I really was. So for me, it was like, this is not what I feel I'm called to do. At the end of the day, I'm always driven by my purpose, which is wanting to change the world. And I didn't think I was going to do it like this. And I quit with no plan. I went to New York for
Say, your friend goes to Florence, you go to New York.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was crazy because I went for a 2-week holiday and I just never got on the plane back. And I made a life for myself there. I was hosting and I learned a lot about myself. I grew up. I had to grow a backbone like no other because New York is not a joke. And I survived that city. And that was a turning point for me because I had nothing to rely on but my actual genuine strengths to really just hustle and push it there. And I saw how the audience received me that side. And I was like, screw it. I can actually make this into a career.
Not to say you were naive in moving there, but what were some of the harsh realities of New York City, of the entertainment industry in America, that really were surprising to you, that hit you hard to go like, okay, this is it. I need to be stronger. I need to work harder.
Yeah, it's a good question because we often have people who've gotten there and they always say like, it's just hard.
Like
no, like the deep down, the ones who actually have been there for more than three days.
Yeah. No, mostly impossible.
Really. No, they generally say like, it really is just, it's like the romance is kind of lost over a certain time period. Like what makes it so hard?
Yeah.
I think for me, my personal experience of New York is, I think also the time I went, the age group I was a 22, at the time. And, I honestly, looking back and even when I was there, because I tried to buy more time as much as I could, I really fell in love with the place. I think it's not for everyone. I think you have to have a certain personality and character. I'm a very straightforward person. And it honestly, I felt like I finally was at a place that got me, where people got me. I lived in Cape Town for 9 years. And what annoyed me was when someone wanted something, they'd beat around the bush. They'd start talking to you. Someone who generally would never talk to you suddenly is talking to you. And I'm that type of person who's like, what do you want? Like, spit it out. And it's like, maybe we can help each other. We don't have to be friends. There's shared value. Let's go. Yeah. And that's New York. It was literally, it was such a breath, fresh of breath air for me in the sense that, you know, I got my first gig at 2 a.m. over a shot of tequila. You know what I mean? And
that's
it literally was just, here we are. I see something in you. I need this. Let's make it happy. Let's meet at the Starbucks off Wall Street at 8 a.m. tomorrow. that does happen. Mm. We keep it moving. We don't have to like each other. We don't have to pretend that we're friends, but let's go. And the hard part of it is, and that's where I had to really grow up, was if someone's about to screw you over right now, they would let you know, I'm about to screw you right now. And, but what I loved about that is you always knew where you stood. And that for me was still the comforting thing. I'm very faith driven, so pray for me and knowing that God is always in control. And I had a very great sense of peace throughout it all. But there were times where I didn't know where I was going to stay the next day because I was subletting and I wasn't legally, you know, able to own or be under property. So it was hard.
That's a different kind of pressure. Huh?
It's a very different kind of pressure. And that's what I mean about I had to grow up very quickly.
Yeah.
I had to be very self-assured. I needed to know who I am because it's a dog eat dog world. And so many people are expats in New York. You seldom find a true, you know, born and bred New Yorker. So what was great about the sense of community that I found there is that everyone came from somewhere else to make it. So there was a lot of, I got you, you know, and if you're family, you family, I got you. You're my peoples. And you know, there was a lot of introductions through communities. So I literally, before I got there, I was introduced and I belonged to a community. And, you know, I had people who were looking out for me. And that was literally the only thing that held me and kept me going is I knew that, you know, the friends that I made there became family and they still are because that's the only way to survive New York. So yeah.
So in the midst of it all, what was it like to be exposed to these powerhouse productions that we watch and particularly for you are inspired by and moved by? You were exposed to David Letterman, you saw some MTV shows, you saw Chelsea Handler when she had her E show, Chelsea Lately. How was that?
That was overwhelming. And that's where you don't have time to be overwhelmed. You really don't because my hosting gig was at the Stand Comedy Club. So when I got there and Paolo Italia, true, just Italian, who's sneaky as hell, who's literally my brother, he was just like, don't worry about it. I got you. He gave me the platform. He's just like, I like you. If you think you can do it, here's your platform. Here's the showroom. Grab the mic. Go for it. So there's no time to really second guess yourself.
Yeah.
You're saying that I can do it. This is what, but I'm not a comedian. I don't know how to host. Like, I'm not funny. I don't think, but, you know, and you're surrounded by your Chris Rocks and you see, you know, Jay Leto here and everyone is in the comedy club. So there's no time to really be like, oh my gosh, am I surrounded by these people? Is this really what's happening? You literally are overwhelmed, but you step in and you kind of just own your
thing. Make it happen.
You just need to own it.
Yeah.
So there was no time to be overwhelmed. You just kind of were like, well, this is how people live here. This is New York. I guess everyone is just, you know, this is how it goes. And the company I worked for, they also own CH Entertainment and they were the producers of, I don't know if you remember, Girl Code and Guy Code.
They came up with
those shows. So it was great to, I really wanted, because producing is a very, I'm an aspiring producer, let me say that. So I got to learn how to start the, shows, the underworkings of a show. You know, I really was just so hungry to absorb absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And also still trying to find what do I want to do, because I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I just left corporate. So it was a proper journey of self-discovery and,
but look, you have found everything that you're about and what you want to do because you've come back and you've been involved in so many various productions. You've been involved in Madiba, in Broken Vows most recently on ETV, and also Black Mirror.
Yeah.
How was that like? And what are, I know it's like picking a favorite child from some of the actors that I've spoken to, but what are like your standouts or highlight roles that you've been part of?
Oh, that's a difficult question, but what immediately came to mind was Madiba. I think just more so the my experience on set and after and the friendship I formed with Lawrence Fishburne. But it was also I'm still a young actor. You know, I'm still learning. I didn't study this craft. It literally, I feel, is a God-given calling. So I'm still learning. I'm still growing. But at the time, I just moved to Joburg, June 2015. Actually, my first interview was here with my girl, Jane Sue.
And
yeah, so I always come back here because really, you know, it was a week into moving to Joburg, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I'm like, okay, let me just do what's needed to be done.
Yes.
So with that being said, you know, I that was my third role. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, was my third acting gig. And it was a very difficult scene. I had to play an 18-year-old, so I had to age myself 10 years down. And, you know, it was a very emotional, hectic scene as well. Across Lawrence Fishburne, who was playing Madiba, and I'm going at him and I'm crying and I'm just like, you know. And I was just like, okay, cool. I got this, I think. I've never done a role like this before. But, you know, I never say I can't do something. I say yes. Black Mirror, they were like, can you do an American accent? I was like, I've never been coached in dialect coaching, but I lived there, whatever.
Shot to Neisner of all places.
Yeah. So I'll never say no, I can't do something. I'll say yes and figure it out. Like, I'll literally just, like, now I had to audition for something else that's international. So I just locked myself in the whole weekend, absorbed myself in this American accent, went to a dialect coach and just literally was like, I'm now going to become this person. I'm going to talk to my family in American accent. They're used to me just being weird every now and again and they get it. But, but Madiba was, because it was such a pivotal role for me. I grew as an actor. As far as just a very authentic piece and a performance and a very vulnerable one. No makeup, bantu knots. I really stripped myself and I was in a very raw, vulnerable position, which I absolutely loved. And, I formed a really great friendship with Lawrence Fishburne. 6 months later, he invited me to his home in LA. He bribed for me. We had a great time. And yeah, I guess that also was a validation for me in, I think, because you never know if you actually are talented in what you're doing, especially if you didn't study it. So I don't know if I could actually act, to be genuinely honest with you.
No, people don't always tell you that you can.
Yes. And
they'll tell you you can't.
Yeah. And it's not like I haven't done a blockbuster, Hollywood blockbuster. So I don't have that validation of, okay, you know, am I able to really do this or am I just getting a part and I'm just winging it?
Sure, but you've got natural application there. This is something you learn from your business start.
Definitely.
And a lot of people get so hung up on this, like, well, I can't be like that person, so therefore I can't do this. But it's about applying yourself. Like, other people would have gone, oh, wait, no, I need to actually consult my dialect coach first. You're like, screw it. I've got a certain amount of time. There's a certain amount of me. I'm going to add the two and something's going to happen of it.
Spot on.
And I think that's a lot of people actually forget when they get into showbiz. Not that I'm a showbiz person, but
yeah, Ben.
But I often hear this because sometimes we get some wishy-washy guests coming in here. Let's be honest, it happens because we've been here for like 5-6 years now, and the better ones always have an application. That's the thing they have in common. They're like, I want to do this. I'm doing it. Like the dots you join in between that's just part of your story later down the line.
Yeah. Well, Nambi, so all I'm saying is, look, after mentioning Beyonce, you are attending Bri's with Lawrence Fishburne. You have 30 seconds at an award show to accept an award for your speech. Everyone in this room has short names, so Sia, Ben, Leanne.
Wow.
You can fit those in 30 seconds.
Wow.
I'm leaving the rest up to you. Listen,
this is a podcast that stays on the webs for a while. I feel like I'm now held accountable.
So if I dare see you on any stage accepting anything and there was no Leanne, Ben, or Sia, this friendship is over.
Wow, thank you
so much for stopping by this morning.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. It was awesome. I wish Leanne would have spoken a bit more.
Oh, should I have?
Yes. No, I feel like I don't know you.
With Sia around, that's impossible.
Oh, good luck, guys. Sorry about that.
I'm a good listener, you know?
The shade of it all. Diamond City, every Sunday at 8 p.m. on SABC1, starring Nambita Ben Mazwi, our guest this morning. Thank you once again for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
You are a rock star and a half.
Thank you.
So even though Gareth is away today. He did record an interview that we'll be airing right now at 8. It's with the Irish ambassador. It is Ambassador Liam.
Oh boy, do you need help with the Irish name?
McGowan.
But it's spelled with like H's and B's. Yeah. And
it looks like MacGabbin.
It's spelled MacGabhan, but it's McGowan. Ambassador Liam McGowan coming up just after 8. That's your 8 a.m. interview that Gareth recorded. Other than that, folks, we are done and dusted.
Yes. Tomorrow's another day.
Scarlet. Is that from a movie?
I don't know. Why am I saying Scarlet?
Numbeats, is that from a movie? Tomorrow's another day, Scarlet? I feel like it's from a classic movie.
No, you got it wrong. So
I'm not too sure.
Oh, that great note. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow, folks. CliffCentral.com.